From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Tax Day just a couple of weeks ago, and maybe it wasn't that painful for you. Maybe you took advantage of some of the opportunities to improve your home and energy costs. But come Tax Day 2020, some things are changing. Frankly, by the end of the year. At the end of 2019, we're going to see the residential federal solar tax credit go down. The commercial federal tax credit will go down. And there are other changes coming as well. So we're talking solar in particular this hour. From the looks of it, these changes could mean longer payback periods, higher prices for residential and commercial solar customers. And does that mean fewer homeowners and businesses will turn to solar? We'd like to know if you've considered solar installation so far. If not, why not? If you want to tell us about that, you can join the conversation with our guests for this hour. And maybe you've heard about some rather big projects that might be coming online in various towns across the area, Rush, Caledonia, Mount Morris, and some other locations. Some places where there is some organized opposition, or at least neighbors concerned. Others where there is a big green light from local government and local residents. So there's a lot of interesting things happening in this area. And let's say hello to our guests here for the hour. Kevin Schulte is the CEO of Green Spark Solar. Welcome back. Nice having you.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us is Ben Friebert, renewable energy engineer and member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Welcome back to you.
Thanks, Evan. Happy to be here.
And also with us is Zach Dufresne, on the line with us, director of membership services for the Alliance for Clean Energy New York. Zach, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Evan. Good. How are you doing?
Very good. You know, Kevin, when we kind of emailed a little bit with you guys about this in advance of this program, it seemed a little dark to me, as in like the clock is now ticking because there's some real changes coming. Should we look at it that way?
I don't know that we want to look at it as a dark time. I'll remind you that I've been in the business of renewable energy for 20 years through a lot of policy changes and a lot of things. And the market generally finds a solution to deploy this stuff. So I am forever optimistic that the genie is out of the bottle for renewable energy and we will continue to go forward. That being said, we're facing some significant headwinds in the next year. For a residential homeowner to go solar, our customers, if they make the decision after this calendar year, could lose between $1,300 and $2,000 on a residential solar system. That's a meaningful number. That, you know, if you think of that just in terms of money in your pocket, like, you don't want to throw that away. So there is both an opportunity in the expedience of going solar and the threat that if these policies all go through, you end up with a less valuable investment in 2020 than you get in 2019. On a business level, those numbers scale, right? So if you're a business, your investment and the dollars that you lose from the tax credits would scale to the size.
What's the biggest, why don't you walk us through, we'll ask all of our guests to kind of weigh in on how they see the landscape in their various sort of perspectives. But Kevin, just start by walking with us through the specific changes on the horizon.
So two sets of changes are coming. One is you have a federal tax credit for both residential and commercial solar and in utility scale solar, which is a 30% federal tax credit. At the end of this calendar year, that drops to 26%. So that's 4%. So where you would get 4% value back for your investment made, you now no longer will get that, right? So that's one. And then the microcosm of New York, we have grants particular to residential solar. In the next couple of weeks, those grants will drop from what is 35 cents a watt or about 10% of your system cost to 25 cents a watt or about, you know, 7 or 8% of your system cost. So those two are meaningful shifts. And then in the commercial space, the grants already dropped from 25 cents a watt to 20 cents a watt. And as those monies are used, you know, again, the opportunity goes down. So from a scaling perspective, like I said, it's you're losing something like overall, you're losing something like 8% of your investment total, depending on what type of project you're doing.
I assume policy could intervene and change some of this before the end of the year. Yes,
I expect it to. And I will tell you, I do look at the world with rose colored sunglasses. I've been fighting this battle for a long time and been a part of this for a long time. And so I do expect there will be some policy changes that come along with it. And frankly, typically in New York over the last 20 years, when federal policy becomes less supportive of renewable energy, New York tends to step in and become more supportive. So as those sort of things happen, I do expect there'll be both a there's a potential for things to happen at the federal level. I also think there's a potential for things to change at the New York State level.
But they haven't yet.
They haven't yet, and don't trust my rose-colored sunglasses because sometimes I overproject. And so the reality is right now we're living with these drops coming.
And if these drops do come, is it going to hurt your business?
I don't.
You're going to say you hope not.
I hope not.
But could it?
It could hurt my business for certain, yeah. I hope not. And there are so many factors. There's so many different things that go on in our business, whether it's the cost of the solar panels that we're importing or whatever it is. So we hope that some market vagary will sort of offset this, you know, investment benefit. But again, those things will come to fruition sort of over time, not necessarily that I can perceive today.
Okay. Ben, what's the story of solar as you see it right now?
Well, I think Kevin's right. I think there is a bit of a cliff coming, both in terms of the federal investment tax credit as well as at the state level. I will say that we're at a stage where this has inspired me to put solar at my home. So I'm in process of doing that. And it's because of these drops coming. So, you know, that may translate for many solar companies like GreenSpark to have at least a short-term influx in, you know, an increase in projects because a lot of people are making this move. In fact, I'm working on a commercial scale project that's sort of the same way. They decided to pull the trigger because of these cliffs coming. So that probably contributes to the vagaries of the market that Kevin's talking about, but it will, I think, produce a short-term spike in projects.
All right, and that's... Look, that's part of the nature of this conversation. You know, Kevin wants to stay in business. He'd like customers. And realistically, if we see federal or state policy intervention changing that, maybe things stay relatively level. Maybe 2019 ends up being a big year just because people see that time ticking down. Do you think, Ben, do you agree with sort of that rose-colored sort of projection that we're going to see some intervention on the state or federal level here?
I think that we'll see continued changes. I don't know if my glasses are quite as rosy as Kevin's because I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit cynical about what drives some of those changes sometimes. And I think...
Well, tell me more about that. What do you think is driving the changes?
Well, I think part of the problem is there. I don't always know. You know, sometimes these changes come about and it's unclear what's really driving them. And so when you see that there's changes likely on the horizon, it's equally hard to tell, you know, what's driving those and therefore which direction are they going to go. And Kevin and I were talking as we were waiting to come in about this problem and the way it impacts the market, that the volatility, both at the federal level, but the state level too, the policy volatility makes it very difficult, not only for businesses like Kevin's, but other folks that are looking to invest in these types of projects. You know, they see that volatility as risk, and I think it slows the market in general for things to be so volatile.
And can you tell me just a little bit more about the projects that you're sort of helping shepherd or getting done this year just because you see that clock running out? How much, you know, of a positive investment, what kind of savings and what do you expect to happen for getting this stuff done now?
You mean in these short-term projects
I'm
talking about? Well, I see, I'm privy to conversations on commercial scale projects where owners are saying, we see that federal investment tax credit cliff and we need to get this going. They're asking questions about the way they can make sure that they secure that investment tax credit, even if they don't start construction until a little bit later. Kevin can certainly elaborate on exactly what those policies are that allow projects like that to make sure that they can be implemented with a 30% tax credit, even if they, you know, they begin to push late in the year or something. So those kind of discussions are happening. They're also, you know, the owners of commercial scale projects are very much tuned into the way the state's megawatt block program works and the way, those values of that incentive drops as each block closes. So, at the scale of project owners, you know, this discussion is happening. They're tuned into what's happening, and that's going to drive some projects to proceed. I guess other projects I'm working on are associated with the community choice aggregation. There's an avenue toward including community scale solar projects directly into community choice aggregation. And that's driving some measure of interest in the policies and interest in moving projects ahead a little more faster in the short term.
Okay. Zach, how do you see the current landscape?
Yeah, thanks, Evan. I agree with what's been said so far. And, you know, I think there's a theory behind these declining incentives, right? And that's as more and more solar gets deployed, the cost is going to go down. The cost of panels goes down. You have a more knowledgeable workforce that can get things done faster. And, you know, the soft costs and all of the costs of these projects go down. And so the subsidies go down accordingly. And I think that's kind of proven to be the case here in New York. The incentives have been slowly declining, but the uptake of residential solar has not gone down in New York, and it's been really a success story in New York. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. But certainly, you know, as Kevin alluded to, the market needs to adjust. And if the market doesn't adjust, then that's when we could really use these incentives to kind of get pushed back up. And another kind of chance to decrease some of that volatility in the market that's been mentioned is to codify some of the state's goals for residential solar. So we have a New York Sun program that's been very successful and is looking to increase its goals. But one way to kind of secure that and make sure that the implementation programs get built around this to increase that solar is to codify New York State's goals. And we're the only state in the country without a codified renewable portfolio standard in statute. And I think that's one step that the state could take to really, really help this business.
Why is that the case, Zach?
Why are we the only state without?
Yeah.
It's a good question. You know, it's kind of a product of circumstance, I think. And the governor has taken great initiative and taken, you know, kind of leadership role in this country on deployment of renewables, but that he's been able to accomplish that through the executive branch. And he's had some pushback in the legislature from the opposing party. And now with the shifting in dynamics in New York's legislature, I think there's an opportunity there. And I think, you know, Kevin and other developers can speak to this. Their investors would really like to see something in statute. And, you know, we haven't needed it until now, but it certainly wouldn't hurt.
You want to add to that, Kevin?
Well, I totally agree. I mean, the biggest challenge in, just to move out of the residential space, the biggest challenge in community commercial and in utility scale solar right now is bringing capital in when the policy market and the legislative drivers in New York State are less than certain. So taking our renewable portfolio standard goals, which are set with the governor and the Public Service Commission, and putting them into law really gives confidence in the capital markets to invest more heavily in New York State. Flow capital, it's really exciting because most of that capital ends up being deployed into upstate, which is obviously near and dear to all of our hearts as upstate residents. So I totally agree with Zach from that perspective. I think it's important to note, just going back to the beginning of this dialogue, the cliff for these incentives at the moment is much more dire for, and I don't like the negative connotation of that word, but it's much more dire in the residential market than it is in the commercial market, because there are opportunities in the tax code for you to buy solar panels this year or buy your racking system this year and safe harbor that 30% value up until the end of the tax credit in 2024. So there's a lot of opportunities with the appropriate capitalization to extend that. But in residential, those rules don't apply. And so it is important to understand that residential probably needs to get fixed first and commercial, you know, can come second.
Ben, you're nodding. You agree with that?
Well, yeah, that's the volatility that I was talking about, and the commercial scale projects that you know, I'm involved with where owners see that cliff, that ability to safe harbor the 30% is key.
Well, I've got a number of questions and comments, as we always do, which is great, from listeners who have either questions about installation, incentives, what's available. That's kind of what we're doing this hour. So if you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You want to call the program, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Adam says, I don't understand why everyone in this region hasn't had at least an estimate done. They're free, aren't they? Are they free? Estimates are free?
Absolutely. I think almost...
Does Adam work for you?
No. I don't have any Adams on staff. So certainly at our company, we provide a free estimate for solar at your home. And I don't know of a single residential installer anywhere that charges you to estimate whether or not you can have solar at your home. So, and there are a bunch of good residential solar installers other than ourselves here locally. So that opportunity is easy. It's free. And frankly, the market with community solar presents you the opportunity that if it doesn't work at your home, there are other ways for you to go solar.
All right, so let me just read. I'll start reading some other feedback. Nancy writes to say, I installed solar panels on my home in the 19th Ward 2 years ago because I thought that the incentives would be reduced with the new federal administration's stance on energy and climate. I'm really happy I did it. I paid a quarter of the total cost after rebates and tax credits. The company I used gave me an interest-free loan for another big chunk until my tax refund came in. So I ended up taking out a 2.99% loan on that quarter of the total cost. The panels are very sleek, so that many of my neighbors don't know that we have them on the roof. My energy use is way, way down, and the value of my home is increased. I haven't figured out exactly how long it will take for the system to pay itself off, but should be between 8 and 10 years. I have no regrets and urge others to jump at the chance before it gets more expensive. That comes from Nancy. It's a nice sort of endorsement of the kind of work that you and your colleagues and for other companies do, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, the industry has presented to homeowners with a reasonable credit score the opportunity to go solar, and your total payment structure ends up being less than your utility bill. So you save money from the first month of installation. For our neighbors that are less advantaged, that don't have the credit score, we have a great program going on in Monroe County with Monroe County right now, where we can actually use HUD funds to get you really cheap solar at your house. And so we have opportunities for anybody in the income stream to make sure they can go solar. And so that's exciting for pretty much everybody. But it is, Nancy's right. She took that opportunity based on her perceived politics at the time. The cliffs are real, right? So people should take advantage of them if they're ready. And going solar is frankly fairly easy, right? It's easy from a finance perspective. It's easy from a, you know, you don't have to do anything. The installer will do it all for you. So it's not a big lift for people to at least take a look and see if it works for them.
Let me ask our other guests about the reasons that the woman who emailed talked about doing it. Ben, you talked about motivation. It's hard to discern motivation and why certain incentives might run out. Do you think that the federal administration and their stance on climate, generally speaking, is part of what should concern people or motivate people to move now? Or do you think that that doesn't always percolate into policy?
Gosh, I don't. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm good at responding to that specifically. I can tell you why I'm making the move that I'm making right now, which is putting solar on my house, and it is the combination of knowing that the financial benefits are there. That's obvious. That actually your caller's right. It'll they pay for themselves, and I'm looking at 8 years. But the climate issues concern me, so that's motivating. And of course on that topic, I have a strong disagreement with the administration at the moment. But I would also say that getting your caller talked about having. Why isn't everybody doing this, having at least a free estimate? I called several installers, and yes, you get a free estimate.
Oh, you did.
And you can learn a lot from them about, about how it works and what the benefits will look like and how long it'll take to recover. And if you can't accommodate solar on your roof for one weather reason or another, and there are some reasons that it just doesn't work, there are some other opportunities there, and I know that GreenSpark is involved with community solar projects, and so there are other ways that people can go to renewable energy.
Okay, and Zach, how do you feel about our emailer's concern about politics impacting possible incentives in the future?
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry about that.
Yeah,
it's a valid concern. Certainly, you want to get the most out of your money, the biggest bang for your buck, and it does seem like kind of the sooner the better as things go. But again, you know, I think that's a benefit. That's going to help more renewables get built sooner, and the sooner the better. And, you know, you're going to still get those benefits. And as the market adjusts, the price of solar will go down, the incentives will go down, and you'll still have that opportunity. And I'm a renter myself, so the, you know, the community solar model is really appealing to me. And there's a new kind of program that a lot of developers are doing now where they're offering kind of a straight up 10% guaranteed discount. And that's a really kind of exciting and really easy to get involved in program that I'm actually currently signing up for myself.
All right, so we have a lot of phone calls and emails, which is great. So let's go start working through them. I'm going to start in Rush with Robin. Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, hi, thanks. This is a question about commercial entities or commercial size scale solar projects. The state, New York State, offers a huge tax write-off refund and subsidies for solar installations because Governor Cuomo wants to meet his 50% reliance on alternative energies. But as a result, isn't anybody aware of the damage that's being done by these huge arrays? First of all, the major beneficiary of these arrays are the investors in the arrays themselves, not the citizens where these arrays are being installed, and certainly not the electrical source users, because their rates are going to go up. What is the benefit to the citizens in the state? We're losing land, we're losing beauty, and we're losing money.
How are we losing beauty? Those arrays look awesome.
Have you ever seen a 4,000-acre solar array?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Installed
that's
on,
great.
On top of farmland?
Yeah, it's definitely great.
Well, that's what I mean. That's precisely what I mean, then.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, like, from my perspective, windmills are great. Solar arrays are great. I don't really understand that complaint at all. But beyond the aesthetics...
Who do you work for?
Who do I work for?
Yeah.
I work for WXXI. I don't understand the question.
Yeah, I mean, Evan, if I can jump in,
Hold on, Zach. Hold on. I want to play this out here. Go ahead, Robin.
I don't understand how anybody can just, okay, before I saw what a large solar array looked like, I'm saying, oh, hey, what the hell? But if you take a look at what they do look like, where they're installed, and the damages they cause, then you have an entirely different perspective. And if someone says, hey, what's wrong with solar? They obviously haven't looked at what's going on.
Okay. Robin, I appreciate that phone call. And I know Zach has a lot to say, because what Robin is talking about are bigger commercial arrays. We're seeing farms like Stokey Farms, for example, Rush, Caledonia. The owners of Stokey Farms are working with an out-of-state company that we could see a solar array there that's bigger in terms of total size than the size of Mendon Ponds Park. That's a big, big array. We're talking, the Democrat and Chronicle reported in Byron, Genesee County, a company from Florida wants to build an enormous Excelsior farm with roughly 1 million solar panels capable of generating up to 280 megawatts of electricity. And we're talking about Mount Morris, where there is a big array planned there, possibly. So, Zach, those are just some of the examples of the big projects I think Robin's talking about. You want to weigh in there? Go ahead. Are you there, Zach?
Sorry about that. I had myself on mute. Yeah, I'm happy to weigh in. You know, it's something that we at ACE New York have been working on quite a bit, some more of these large-scale projects that we also think are quite beautiful. And, you know, obviously visual impact is going to be subjective to anyone. But if you look at a wind turbine next to a coal stack, I would much prefer the wind turbine. And I think a lot of people don't typically have to look at what's creating their energy. They typically just get it whenever they need it and don't have to think about it. But having to, you know, some solar panels or a wind turbine in your view shed that allows you to turn your TV on to heat your home, those kind of things, you know, I think it's something that all of us should be able to live with. You know, there's a big pushback for cell phone towers a while back too, or even telephone lines down the side of the street. But we're all very accustomed to that now, and I think renewable energy will get there eventually too. We'll all be very accustomed to the look.
But Zach, if I could, because he raised a couple of other points beyond the aesthetics, and Robin, I'll just say again, to my eye, they look great. If they don't look good to your eye, you're right. That's subjective. I mean, people are going to disagree on that. But he's also saying that the people who benefit are generally out-of-state investors, and he's saying local energy costs are going to go up. What do you say to that, Zach?
Yeah, well, that was the first thing I wrote down, and the rates won't go up. That's certainly not something that we've ever seen in the past or that we expect to see going forward. In fact, what we've seen, many of our developers will offer like an offset program where they'll pay a certain percentage of your electricity bill for the next 20 years. And I've seen that as high as 75% of the entire town's electricity bill for the next 20 years. Now, that's on top of the lease payments to the landholders. And talk to some of these people who own the farms that these are going on and tell me, you know, that they don't have the right to put solar panels on their farm when soybeans aren't cutting it for them. You know, if they want to harvest the sun rather than harvest soybeans, I think that should be their right. And, you know, I don't know if you like soybeans better than corn or if you think you should decide what goes on other people's land, but there aren't these damages that I think I also heard. I'm not sure what damages he's referring to when all we really see is the benefits, and especially if you compare it to the fossil fuels. We can very clearly see the damages that fossil fuel generators cause, both on our children, on our current state, and future generations. And to ignore those damages because a wind turbine might kill a bird every now and then, I think, is misguided.
Let me, before I turn to our other guests on this subject, just read a little bit of the feedback that some of the political leadership has had, because there have been very different reactions depending on where the particular large array proposal is. In Byron, Genesee County, here's the Democrat and Chronicle reporting, that's the one with probably the biggest local proposed plant, and this is a quote from Town Supervisor Roger Rouse to the Democrat and Chronicle. Approximately a good two-thirds of land in Byron is under cultivation in one form or another. There's a lot of people that would be against it in some form or another. That's Town Supervisor Roger Rouse about the solar array project there. Whereas in Mount Morris, Town Supervisor Charge Di Pasquale says, quote, we're 100% behind our project. Everybody seems really excited about it. It's going to be a win-win situation for the town in terms of revenue coming in, which we definitely need. And the developer in that case would pay about $400,000 a year to the town, the Mount Morris School District, and Livingston County. So that's just very different reactions in different places. Kevin Schulte, what do you think?
Well, I think we have a huge challenge to make sure that we understand all of the economic benefits that are being brought by these projects. You know, the caller, Robin, had challenges associated with who's benefiting. And to me, you mentioned the $400,000 a year pilot payment that's happening for Mount Morris. That's a lot of money for small communities that they're not receiving now, as most ag is exempt from paying that. So you're driving revenue to these towns, which increases services like firehouses and water and sewer and all of those things that come to these towns as a result of this increased revenue. That is a big portion of the benefit. You're talking about land leases, and Zach mentioned them. Many, many farmers in Western New York are suffering right now because of low dairy prices, because of low apple prices, because of low price for the crops that they're making. So when they take the opportunity to lease a portion of their land for solar or for wind, and they keep bringing revenue in that allows them to maintain as much cultivating land as they can, that's a huge economic boost for our farming community. And we hear it time and time again. Now, we don't do projects on the scale that they're talking about, but we lease land from farmers all the time. And we hear all the time, you're helping me keep my farm and my family based on this revenue. And to me, that's a tremendous benefit that these projects are bringing. Not to mention, I am a local company. I employ a good number of people. At any point in time this year, we will have 100 or so people working to build projects for us. We've got local jobs and local investment that are going into these projects. And it's important to note, I think also, with one of Robin's questions, it's an outside investor coming in to own these projects. There are not a lot of, other than the New York Power Authority, there are not a lot of generating assets, electricity generating assets owned by New York State companies. They're owned by companies from all over the country and all over the world, and that's just our reality. So having an outside investor in a solar or wind project is just part of what we're doing.
You want to add to that, Ben?
I don't have anything to add to that. These guys have done a really good job.
Okay, so. Well, to be fair, what I want to do is I want to just there's two other callers who want to kind of follow that up, and then we're going to kind of get back to other calls and other questions. But Robin wanted to follow that, and I want to make sure he's got that chance. Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, thank you. The answers to my issues that were just raised are perfectly valid for a small local establishment. A small local farm guy wants to reduce his energy requirement. It all makes sense. But what I'm talking about is not a small, reasonable installation. What I'm talking about is a 2 to 5 square mile area that will be taken over by glass plates. Now, there's about 6 dozen problems with that, and I won't go into all of them. Whether or not it's an out-of-state investor wasn't the issue. The issue is it's an LLC, limited liability, LLP, whatever the hell they're called, limited liability company with no liabilities once they remove themselves from their lease. So whatever happens to the energy, whatever happens to the solar array, it's not their problem anymore. Now, they can back out of it very easily because Invenergy already did that on Long Island with their solar array that is only 150 acres, which they sold to Duke Energy. Now they're out of the picture. So now Duke is responsible for whatever happens to that array. Wind damage, storm damage, whatever. The issue was the subsidies that New York State offers are incenting investment out of scale with need. An answer was raised, well, we generate electricity from various companies around New York State. They're all, none of them necessarily are New York State owned. Well, yes. What about Niagara Falls? That's water generating electricity that is owned by New York State, and it's not even fully utilized. So why are we building these huge arrays in New York State?
Okay.
In farmland.
All right, Robin, thank you. Zach, any more you want to add to that?
I had something. Yeah, I mean, the pilot agreements certainly are another huge investment. So Robin mentioned that there's limited liability or no liability. And, you know, that's certainly not true. They have a great amount of liability. They go through years and years, especially for these large projects, of environmental impact studies. They have to file a public participation plan and hold a number of public hearings. And that's something that you don't see from your Walmart or other developers, who are kind of putting in some large development projects. I think the standards on generators are quite a bit higher than other developers. And as part of this increased standard that developers have, that generation developers have, is a decommissioning plan. And any one of these projects that Robin's referring to, before they can go forward at all, have to put forth a decommissioning plan. And they also have to put up a good chunk of money up front, just in case they go out of business, just in case, earth, wind, and fire, unforeseen circumstances. The developer has already put forth a bunch of money and set forth a plan for decommissioning that project just in case. And that money's sitting there in the bank, ready to go, before the project even gets built. There's processes. All this has been thought through very carefully. And generators in New York State face a huge challenge building these big projects.
So, Zach, let me just ask you before we get our only break, and then we're going to come right back to listener calls because we've got a lot of them. But put a little cap on this part of the conversation by explaining to me, Robin called in and raised a lot of concerns. And I had an email from a woman who was raising similar concerns. There has been some opposition in various places. What do you think is driving that, Zach?
Oh, that's a good. I got the same exact question from my intern this morning, Evan. What is driving this? And there's no simple answer. I think a lot of it is aversion to change, and people are comfortable now. They don't see where they get their energy from. They they typically in upstate New York, we don't see the negative impacts that some of the people around these generating facilities see. Some of the local pollutant criteria pollutants that really affect people's health. I mean, it's real impacts. There's a reason that coal plants have been regulated and forced to clean up their operations because they're hurting people. And so I think, you know, as an alternative form of energy, wind and solar is just such a great option. And embracing it is so important. If you have one of these projects in your localities, due to this opposition, this mounting opposition, this kind of changing narrative where I've been hearing that for the sake of our children, we need to not build these solar panels. And I think what we really need is some pro voices out on the ground, going to these town hearings, going to the town council meetings, and really voicing how important it is to get these projects built.
Yeah,
not just to have the targets, but we need to implement those targets. We need to put steel in the ground.
Here's Stacy writing to us to say, Dear Evan, Delaware River Solar is proposing to build a 40-acre solar power plant in rural, historic, and beautiful Farmington, New York. We, the concerned citizens of Farmington, do not think it will be at all attractive to view such a large project of that size in a landscape outside our windows. Our property values will decline. Solar power arrays of this size should be located in an industrial zone. Keep the farm in Farmington. That's from Stacy. So, you know, you're seeing some opposition. It's similar in some ways to the opposition to wind turbine projects. So, interesting. But let's get back to your calls. We got a lot of calls and questions about sort of individual, what the incentives are and what people are looking at for their own properties or their own businesses. So let's do that. You just heard Zach Dufresne on the line, the Director of Membership Services for the Alliance for Clean Energy New York, Kevin Schulte, the CEO of Green Spark Solar, in studio with us alongside Ben Frevert, a renewable energy engineer and member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. We're back to your feedback and phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Chase Bank is apologizing after offering daily spending advice for customers. We explored the controversy over a bank's tweet that went viral. In our second hour, graduates of color from the Pittsford Central School District discuss their experiences there and the recent problems their district is facing. Join us Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about, in our second hour, we're going to welcome graduates of color from the Pittsford Central School District in advance of a public forum that Pittsford, the town, and the district are hosting on Thursday night. WXXI and the Democrat and Chronicle, among others, have reported on some challenges that the district faces, and tomorrow you're going to hear graduates of color talk about their perspectives going to school in Pittsford and how they view some of those issues there. Let me get back to your phone calls. We've got a lot to work through, so let's go ahead and just get through as much as we can this hour. Dominique, next from Caledonia. Go ahead, Dominique.
Yes, hello. This is Dominique Laputra. I'm in Caledonia. In 2009, we began the retrofit of our 1830s house. We installed a ground source heat pump. Later, we installed a first solar array a couple of years later. And then 2 years ago or 3 years ago, a second solar array. We now pay nothing except service charges to connect to national grid. We pay nothing in general per year for our energy. That's heat, hot water, electric, everything. We did this for two reasons. We did this because we felt really that it was the right thing to do. We are facing an existential crisis that I don't think is talked about enough. More often than not, the financial benefits are what take precedence. And while the financial benefits are real, we also, I think more than anything, have to consider that we have, according to the IPCC, we have 12 years to begin to really make a dent in the amount of carbon we put into the atmosphere. And that should be, I think, our primary focus. It's a moral duty we have to our grandchildren and their children to leave them with a planet that's habitable. And there's absolutely no doubt about the fact that we're headed in that direction of really ruining the planet unless we do something major to curb that. And the major thing we have to do is to adopt renewables as quickly as possible put less carbon into the atmosphere and stop mining fossil fuels, period. I don't think there's any other way to say it.
Yeah, Dominique, let me just jump in here and say Dominique is raising two points that we're hearing from a lot of listeners, which is, number one, on the investment side, it works. Sarah on Twitter says, we did it. We've got solar. We wanted to reduce our carbon footprint and use our south-facing roof's full potential. Sean on Twitter says, we've got panels. Didn't think it was going to be financially feasible, but the way they structure the loans are genius. Nothing up front for us, and the monthly payments are about what you're saving on RG&E, so you break even until the panels are paid off, and you're saving from then on. But going back to Dominique's point, yes, it has worked out financially, but she views it as a moral component. How do you see it, Ben?
I agree with her very much. The science is in, and it's real. This problem is a real problem, and it's a volatile topic in the political discourse. So I think a lot of people stake out ground on one side of the argument or other without necessarily knowing much about what the science says behind climate change. And I agree with Dominique further that our best way to move quickly on this, particularly at a local level and state level, is to try to implement renewables as quickly as possible. I think that the problem is really urgent, and I think that each day we see new reports about how not only how bad this problem is, but how much it's accelerating. And it's easy to not see those things if you don't travel widely or don't read widely. But if you do, the problems are very real, and we need to take action quickly.
Let me get Nancy and Leroy, who promises she's not a plant but a GreenSpark customer. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, Evan. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a GreenSpark customer, but I am not a plant. I've been very pleased with their service. In fact, I'm having my second solar system put in today because my last one that I had put in last April, I had an electrical fire someplace else in my house. And I had to have the whole thing replaced because I lost a lot. At any rate, I didn't have to hire them to put in a new one, but I hired them again. So I'm very pleased with their work. I do have to say I agree with Dominique 100%. It is a moral issue. We all need to do something if we can. Those of us who can do it need to do it. With respect to the cost of this system, I took two loans to pay for this system. The second one is covered by insurance because of my loss. But I took two loans, and I just paid off a very large loan with my tax rebate or tax refund, however you want to term that. And I now have the other loan that I'm working through. I pay way more on it every month than I need to. But if I only paid what I had to, it is less than even my summertime electric bill. And just like Dominique, I am paying only the service fee to stay connected, and I don't have a heat pump or any of the other fabulous things that Dominique had mentioned. So I'm just doing it on solar, and I'm very conservative with my electrical use because I have been, an environmentalist for a very, very long time. It's not my profession, but it is, one of my pastimes. So I feel very strongly that this is a moral issue. I also have a small farm, and I have begun to explore possibilities of converting my hay pastures, which are organic, into a solar farm. I've just started investigating the possibilities of possibly doing that.
Nancy, thank you. And not a plant, Kevin.
Not a plant. Nancy, thank you for being a customer. But I actually want to disagree with Nancy and Dominique.
What?
Because I agree that, look, I've been doing this my whole life since I was a teenager. And my moral compass says, we should save the planet. And that's why I got in this business, and I've been doing it for a long time. But in our world and in our day and age, the political discourse, the public discourse around this issue, We shouldn't judge someone's morality based on the actions they take or don't. That's not our job, right? We are in a investment opportunity, an economic growth opportunity measured in the tens of trillions of dollars to convert our economy from energies of the past to energies of the future. we all need to hold on to that opportunity, because we can all bond around that reality and we can have a positive public discourse where we don't have to question someone's intent or motivation or morality, but we can all say our country is better, our world is better, our opportunity as people to employ people and everything else is better if we go after this tens of trillions of dollar opportunity. So let's do that. Let's all of us engage in that dialogue, because that's how we will truly move this forward at an even more rapid scale. The other thing that I'd like to say, and that I'm very proud of, is on the AP wire this morning was the United States renewable energy production for the first month in its history surpassed coal production. Like, I've been in this business since I was a teenager. That's a huge milestone. That's doing the work, and we need to go faster. And to go faster, we need to create bonds across all political spectrum and all moral compass to get this job done.
Marshall in Caledonia. We could take calls all day on this. Marshall in Caledonia. Go ahead, Marshall.
Hi. I want to respond partly to Robert, who called earlier.
Robin,
about
yeah.
The loss. Robin, thank you. The loss of farmland. I've been driving by the space where the Caledonia Rush solar farm is proposed for years, and the only thing that's been grown on there is the same three crops over and over and over and over, and the quality of the land and standing water on the land has increased during that time. I think a 20-year hiatus, during which time solar is produced there and animals can graze under the panels, and I understand beekeeping is another possibility, will certainly help to bring the quality of that land back, and it wouldn't hurt to take it out of rotation for a little bit.
Yeah, Marshall, thank you. Zach, I will say from the news reporting I've seen elsewhere that the farmers, in particular the folks from Stokey Farm, said that, you know, the land that they're talking about putting this array on isn't great farmland to begin with. Is that what you're hearing too, Zach?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption for just about anywhere these panels are proposed. If the land was producing, economically viable crops, then the farmer would have no incentive to put solar panels up. Clearly, the farmer is struggling on some level. And what we see, you know, as Kevin alluded to earlier, I've talked to, I can't even name how many farmers I've talked to, that really see this as their last ditch effort. They're only able to support their farms with their other business ventures, and they're trying to keep the farm and the family, but they just can't figure out, without feeding from other areas, how they keep the farm alive. Well, this is one way they can do it, and we haven't seen them typically cover the whole farms. You know, they'll cover a fraction of the farmland, and the lease payment from that will help to support the rest of it. It really seems like a no-brainer. But again, it's not just the farmer making these decisions. As part of the permitting process, the whole town is going to get involved. There's going to be public hearings. There's going to be multiple chances for participation. The developer is going to pay those opponents to oppose them. It's called intervener funding. Along with a decommissioning plan, the developers have to put forward money for interveners to oppose their projects, because we in New York State want to make sure that every voice is heard. And so if those opponents don't have enough money to pay the legal fees to make sure that their voices are being heard, our developers have to put that money up. What we've seen, and solar is a little bit more of a nascent industry, especially for large scale, than wind. We have a lot of operating large scale wind projects upstate. We don't have any large scale solar projects operating upstate right now. But, you know, the opportunity is there, and the time is now.
Diana in Rochester called in to ask, what happens in terms of the overall grid if many people switch to solar? How do we pay for its upkeep? Kevin?
Largely, renewables have been, in the early days, we were viewed as a potential problem because of the intermittency of the resource. But over 20, 25 years of increasing additions of renewables, we've seen that renewables are typically a benefit to the grid. So I don't think we're going to cost the grid to be upkept. The reality of our grid is it is very old and it needs to be rebuilt. Oftentimes it's being rebuilt on the cost of the developments of solar, wind, and other new energies.
We've essentially covered two subjects this hour. One is these large-scale proposals that you've heard about in Rush, Caledonia, Mount Morris, Byron, and elsewhere. We'll continue to cover those going forward. And listeners, if you've got concerns, you can continue to share them, and we're going to try to work through what the experts are telling us, the owners of the land and the experts behind the projects. And then there are the questions of the incentives. 15 seconds. Tell them again what the incentives by the end of the year are changing for solar. So you still have time before the end of the year to do what?
Yeah, go solar. I mean, your opportunity now, if you go this year, will save you on your home, will save you between $1,300 and $2,000 on incentives if you do it this year.
Okay. And the business changes as well coming. Is that right?
Yep. Get in this year and we can get you significant savings on solar. It's a good time to go.
Zach Dufresne, Director of Membership Services for the Alliance for Clean Energy New York. Thanks for taking the time for us this hour, Zach. We'll talk again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Evan.
Our thanks to Kevin Schulte, CEO of GreenSpark Solar.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you very much. And our thanks to Ben Frevert from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Always good, Ben. Thank you.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
And listeners, if you did not get through, every time we talk renewable energy, home projects, etc., we blow up. So we're going to have to just keep doing it. So please be patient. We'll continue to talk about these subjects. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. And thanks, David, as well. Thank you very much, David Griffin. Thank you for listening. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.